Yes, indeed. Hello, Yvonne.
Oh, hello, you trooper. You've been on here all day. I am impressed.
Yes, I couldn't tear myself away.
So I'm going to turn it over to you. I'm going to turn it over
Right.
to Evelyn.
Thank you
Go
so
ahead.
very much. I am so pleased to be here today. And I'm glad I had the time that I could stay all day because something was going to get X'd out. The way I have felt today about listening to all these powerful speakers that you have here. And I kept thinking back about our conversation, and you said you didn't know any black people. And I'm saying, I get on here and you know everybody that's on here. And I think to myself, what is she saying to me? That's not true. She knows all these people. But it's been an awesome experience this morning. And I want to thank everybody that has shared today. Because what you have said have touched me today. I mean, everything. And it's really uncanny how when I get into this program and my life unfolds because you tell me about myself. And that's just incredible. But that's what I needed because I couldn't see me. I could only see you. But when you talk about you, I see me. And that's just the way my God works. So I want to say my name's Evelyn, and I live in Dallas, Texas. I was born in Tyler, Texas, so I'm a Texas girl all my life. My home group is the Aquarius Alamo Family Group in the North Dallas area. And on the 20th of May, I will celebrate 12 years with Al-Anon. So I have 12 years of serenity. It may not sound like it today after I get through talking to you, but that's my number and I'm sticking to it. So I want to say I was born in Texas, born in Tyler, Texas. I'll just give you a little bit of history of where I come from because I realize that along with some of the other things that the speakers have been saying, that I qualified for this program before I even knew about the alcoholic or alcoholism. Because when I grew up, my parents were very loving parents and they were not alcoholics, but there was drinking. And it was not a problem for me because it didn't look like a problem for them. And we always had big family gatherings. And, you know, some people were drinking and some weren't. And it was just a good time and and people enjoyed themselves. And if there was jail time going on, I didn't know anything about it. Or if people lost their jobs, I didn't know anything about it. That's just something kids don't know. You don't get to know everything. But I found myself in a place where I had these things going on with me and my brothers. I had two older brothers and you know, we were always getting into it about something, and they were very protective of me. So even after I got into school, it was hard for me to make relationships with people or guys, I should say, because they were always there. Like, what do you got to say to my sister? What is it you want to say to my sister? So I had this attitude toward them all the time, like they were in my way. But I learned to love them a lot. And I realized that my dad had told them what to do, and if they didn't take care of me, what he was going to do to them. So, my growing up, I say, was a protective kind of way, was a protective kind of situation. But I managed to find a way to do things that were not in my character. Well, no, it was in my character because I did them. But there were things that I shouldn't have been doing. I managed to get into some trouble myself. But my dad was so very loving. I always wanted to please him no matter what. And as I can continue to try to live my life and what I say live my life and be a good girl, my dad became a minister when I was 12. And I loved to dance. I was always in front of the TV. And, you know, he was constantly telling me, girl, sit down somewhere. Could you just sit down somewhere? if American Bandstand was on, clear the room, because I'm got my skirt tails scrolling all around. You know, I'm just busy moving around. And I as I continue to grow and go to high school, and when it was time to go to high school, the schools became desegregated. And we were bused to the white school. And there were probably about 30 of us that were sent to the white school. And we all knew each other because we all came from the same school. But inside the school grounds, there were times that we were all separated. So there was like you have to make some kind of relationships with people. So I found my way of getting into activities that I like to do. So I was in the girls' choir, and I was very athletic, so I would do things like that. And I could find in those opportunities a way to be alone, but yet be a part of. And so I just found my way of making it through all those things that where people could have let me know that they didn't like me because of my skin color, but it didn't matter to me because at home, my parents were always telling me, you can be whatever you want to be. You got this and you got that, and you just work hard and go to school and you can be whatever you want to be. And so I adopted that attitude and I just went through life that way. I never left home. I never lived away from home until I got married. And when I got married, it was when I said before that I had, you know, been a little promiscuous, been promiscuous. You either are or you're not. There ain't a little to it. But I had a baby before I married. But the baby, his dad decided that, you know, he would, you know, he wanted to be married. He wanted to be the father of the child. And so we agreed to marry. And my parents were very concerned about that and said that that we both were too young. We were 23. And I don't think that was too young. Even today, I don't think it was too young. But I had not had any experience for being away from home. But when I did marry, and we moved away, we didn't move very far. We moved to Dallas, and we started our life together. I expected my home to be like the home I left, the home I was raised in. And boy, was I up for a rude awakening, because he and I were not raised in the same home. And I know that today, I know that that's a very important thing, that, you know, conversations should be had and comparisons should be had and, you know, long discussions should be talked about before you enter into a marriage like that. But I had an idea of what my marriage should be like, and I was going to go about making that true. Whether no matter what he did, I was going to have enough of everything that was needed to make this marriage work. And that was my character. You know, I can do this. I will make this work. It's all about my strength and my eagerness that I put into it, and then all of that is going to make it work. And it just, that's the attitude that really just kind of took me down. And so we were married for 8 years. And in that relationship, I had 3 children, 2 boys and then a girl. And about year 5, our marriage began to, it just began to fall apart. I got lonesome for going home, and he was very controlling, wanting me to be a big girl and, you know, your parents don't have anything to do with this anymore, that kind of thing. And the more we talked about that, the more resistant I became toward him. And things just kind of broke up. And of course, the children are in the marriage by that time, they are affected as well. But I couldn't see that. And so after that 8th year, he and I divorce. And we divorced because I could not handle the relationship any longer. It was very violent. He was a fighter, and I was not. But there came a time when I decided I was going to fight back. And the only way I knew to fight back at the time was a physical fight. And when I enter into a physical fight with a man that's 6 feet, and I'm only 5'2", and probably weighed at that time like 110, I didn't have a chance. But I stayed there because I did not want to be defeated. I didn't want to be defeated, so I tried to stay. And when I realized that I couldn't, I left him and I went to my cousin's house in California. I just needed to get away. And the next thing I knew, he was driving up in the parking lot for my cousin's place, which I didn't even tell him where I was. So he was the kind of person that was going to come and get me and bring me back home. He was, you know, you're not going to run away from me and let that be it. You're going to come back home. So that happened. I left him at least 5 times. And he came for me and brought me back. And there was a certain amount of fear there that kept me there when I realized that, you know, I was in that kind of relationship. And I ended up getting help from the Salvation Army, where they have a place for battered women. And my children and I were, I took my children there, and we stayed there for about a month or 30 days. I did have a job at the time, so I was able to, you know, take care of us. And with that, but I had to have a way of getting away from him. I didn't have money for an attorney, but the legal aid portion of the county helped me to get that set up. And he was so afraid of the law, when it was time to go to court, he didn't even show up. So there was no contest with the divorce. And at that point, I became a single parent. And I didn't know, during the marriage, there were so many times that he was just not there, that it didn't seem like I missed him, you know, once we got divorced. And I found out later on that he had 3 children with me, and he had 3 children with another lady while we were still married. And then he had a set of twins with another lady while we still married, right after, before the divorce was actually final. So I realized how much in denial I had been, because if I wasn't able to see that, he got so much time to do all of that, then he wasn't spending time at home anyway. But every time I saw him, I never knew who I was going to meet, who was going to come through that door. But it was always a fight, because, you know, he'd rather do that than talk about our relationship and where we were. But as I came out of that marriage, I was so, I was just depleted of any kind of self-esteem. And, you know, I know, as much as I tried to encourage my children and keep them going and point them in the right direction, what I was feeling and what I was going through was definitely affecting them. So in 88, my husband, and we were ex at the time, he was murdered. And when that happened, my children, I was afraid for them, because they did not have a relationship with him, but I knew the older kids, the 2 boys, wanted a relationship with him, but now it wasn't possible. So I took them to see a counselor, and I wanted them to have the opportunity to work through something that would be going through their minds and in their hearts that they may not share with me. The counselors told me that they were okay, they were strong, they were going to be okay. But that next year, or maybe several months after that, the oldest one started to act out and get in trouble. And I went through just so many years with him, going, in and out of jail and spending prison time, first time 3 years, and then coming home and do something else and go back for 5 years and do something else and go back for 5 years more and then for 8 years. And today that kid is 47, and he has spent 2/3 of his life in the prison system. And when I was going through that with the oldest one, the younger one, the police were telling me, you need to do something about the younger one because he's going to come right along behind him and do the same thing. And that put so much fear in me that I hunkered down and tried to hold on tighter and do things that I thought would help keep my little family intact. That's all I wanted to do. I was going to keep my little family intact and get these kids raised so that they can have a life that they could, you know, live and be a great citizen, you know, just have a real life. And so the second boy started to go to prison too, and I was just totally out of my mind. I started dating this gentleman who, I think we dated for maybe about, I don't know, 10 or 15 years. And then he decided to go to AA. And when that happened, that was another aha moment for me, because I didn't know he had that problem. But after he decided to go is when I could look back and see the things that were happening that were an indication for me. If I had known anything about alcoholism or known anything about what alcohol does to a person or thought about it, I might would have, you know, recognized some signs and known some things, but I was totally clueless. And then the things that my son was doing, I thought he was just out there acting up. I didn't know that he was drinking and drugging and all of that. But that came to light as well. So I became, you know, it's like, what is going on with my life? All this stuff is happening. There was a time that I took on a part-time job because I'm a single parent. And that was the worst thing that I could have done for my family life, for my children, because that meant I had to be out of the home longer than if I just had a regular job. I was so blessed by God that I never had to change jobs and get me in that job. And even though during those times, jobs were being sent overseas and people were leaving my job all around me, but I maintained mine. And I know that I didn't have more education. I didn't have more experience. I didn't have anything more than other people around me that were being sent away. And so I know today that was my higher power working in my report, because I was definitely determined to keep these kids together. But, you know, they had their own agenda and they were just doing things that just kept the family broken up. The daughter, which is the third child, she saw all that happening as she was growing up, and she decided she wasn't going to do any of those things. So she was the one that, you know, continued and finished high school and got into college. And now she's been a teacher for 14 years. And I'm really, really proud of her. But it's her doing that helped me to believe that I was not the total at fault with what my boys had gone through. Because I took, it's all my fault that they turned out that way. And after coming to Al-Anon, I realized that, you know, I was giving them all the same thing, all the same love, all the same direction. It's just that they made different choices and went a different direction. And it was her behavior, her actions that helped me to come into the thought of what Al-Anon had brought to me. So when the gentleman that I was dating decided to go to AA, he about 4 months after he had been in, he said to me, there's a meeting going on down the hallway, and it's for the families of people that, you know, are dealing with alcohol and drugs. And you might want to go to that meeting for your son. And I thought, okay. Because I had done everything I knew in regards to trying to help my son. You just wouldn't believe. But when he said that, I had a certain kind of attitude about it because I thought, well, what about you? I need to deal with you too. You wanted to do this for me and my son, but I need this for you too. But I kind of put that attitude aside so that I could receive the help that he was trying to give to me. And so that's how I came to get into Al-Anon. He went with me that first meeting to Al-Anon. And today, I am eternally grateful for that because that was a sign of care and love that he was showing toward me, but I didn't see that at the time. But, you know, my whole life was chaos and cloudy at the time. I couldn't see anything too clearly. But that first meeting for Al-Anon that I went to, and I'm really honored to be here today and to have heard all these speakers that have spoken today and have brought back to my memory my first days in Al-Anon, and that to be a part of a family that is so huge is just so, it's so wonderful for me. When I went into that first meeting, there were probably about five people. And they were all white people. They were ladies and one guy that I remember. There was one guy that I remember there, and the rest of them were ladies. And those same people are in my life today. And I am so, when I think about that, that's a real blessing for me, because that told me that the attitude that they displayed to me when they first met me was one of genuineness. And because I accepted that, they stayed. They stayed with me. They didn't push me out. They didn't, you know, do anything that said I shouldn't be there. But I didn't look like them. But that was okay with me because I was there for a different reason. And it didn't dawn on me that I would be in so many meetings that would be this same way. And so after a short time that I had been in Al-Anon, I had two missions that I was trying to complete in Al-Anon. First of all, I was going to find the president, because there is no way an organization this big and this huge can exist and live without a president. And then the other one was, our mission was to find my people, because I'm seeing all of you guys, the white people that I'm seeing everywhere, but I'm not finding mine. And I go about this mission when I was with my gentleman friend. We were going around all around town, San Antonio, Houston, Waco, all the cities around Texas where there were meetings at. And a lot of them were AA meetings, but there were AA and NA and OA and all kind of meetings. We were just going to meetings. And I was learning so much and being introduced to so many people that were in recovery, until I just took on that attitude of needing recovery. And so that's another reason that I'm grateful for him as having beginning my recovery program. And so as I start to go to these meetings, and I'm looking for people that look like me, and I don't see them anywhere. But I know in my own family makeup and in my neighborhood, these people need Al-Anon too. So I have this weird idea. I said, well, okay, Al-Anon is just really, really great. It's doing great for me. We need to have it in the schools. We need to have Al-Anon in the schools. We need to have Al-Anon in our Christmas family Christmas parties. You know, I'm just going to throw Al-Anon in there wherever. And then I started to learn how it's a voluntary program. You get to go because you need it, not because you want it. You want this program. It's the reason you're there. And so I had to back off and know that, just like I had the opportunity to stay, when you are introduced to Al-Anon, you get the opportunity to stay as well. And there's something there that I can't tell you exactly what was said at my first meeting that helped me to coming back, helped me to keep coming back, but it was the way I felt. It was the way I felt in that first meeting that let me know I was where I needed to be. And one of the things was I heard people saying, talking about their own lives and their own homes, things that I had been taught and believed that I would never let come out of my mouth. I've been stuffing this story about my life for years, and I'm surely not fit to tell it now because all you want to do is use it against me. Well, after a while, and I started to share my own story, I had the idea, which helped me to share, that they are telling about their lives. And if they tell about their lives, when I tell about mine, they better not tell it because I know something on theirs too. I know how to get back at that. So, but that wasn't even the right attitude to have, but that's what helped me to open up and to start to share. And this program that we're in today, Alcoholism Knows No Color, that's really at the heart of where I was trying to find my place in Al-Anon. But then I realized I was already in there and being pulled in by the people that whose skin was not like mine. So I needed to be someone who might could take it to my people where they were not. And it reminds me of our declaration that says, let it begin with me. When I started to understand what Al-Anon was about, I just wanted all that I could get. So my home group, what being small the way it was, I found out that there were three or four other groups near my home. So I started visiting other groups. The other group that I visited where Yvonne and I have a mutual friend, I didn't see anyone there my skin color either. But these people had a service program that was like, I mean, it's like blow up. Everybody in that meeting was doing some kind of service work, you know? And they asked me, have you ever been to assembly? And I'm excited about it. I don't know that time. I'm saying, no, I don't even know what that is. And they go, oh my God, you don't know what assembly is? I said, well, you have to go with us. Come on and let's go. And I'm saying, okay, when is it? So now if I had fear, any fear about being with them, it should have kicked in right then, because there I was in a place, I'm the only person of color there, and we're going to all be in this car, and we're going to be traveling for about 3.5 hours, and when we get there, I don't know where I'm going to sleep, where I'm going to do it. My fear should have kicked in then, but it didn't. The way they approached me, the way they loved me, the way they carried me along, that is exactly what I needed, and I know my higher power was working in my regard even then. But still, I was still waiting to see where I really belonged in this program. But then I started going to other groups, and I met in another group a lady that when I walked into that group for the first time, I met her husband first because I came in through what we call the other door. The other door is where the AAs go to, and the Al-Anons had the back door. So I go through the front door, and when I walk in, I am like a deer in headlights. I can feel my eyes big eyes walking in, and this gentleman looks around because he heard the door open, and he says, uh-oh, it's somebody new. So he waved his hand, and he patted the seat that was next to him. Says, come and sit here. And y'all have all heard about that. Somebody in the room see that you're not accustomed to being there. So they just pat the empty seat next to them. And so I went and sat. And that gentleman that I met ended up being the husband of the woman in the Al-Anon room. And he introduced me to her. They became my favorite couple. Years later, he passed, and she became a person that I mean, today, we love each other to death. And when she, her eyesight got a little bad, and she knew that I was going to every meeting in town that would be there. And so she called me, and she said, Evelyn, are you going to that meeting? And I said, yeah. She said, well, can I ride with you? And I said, yeah. Then we started going to conferences together out of town, and she would say, we're going to go, but you can drive my car. I was like, no, I don't want to drive your car. Yeah, we're going to drive your car this time. So when I show up, when she and I show up, it was me and her together. Then we became this couple that's called Driving Miss Daisy. I was driving, and she was always there. And we had the very best relationship, still not dealing with anyone of my own skin color. And I, pretty soon, I put that aside. I forgot about that. Just leave that alone. And so there are two things that I have found that are common that I have with everybody else in this program, no matter what your skin color is. And the first one is the effects of that alcoholism has had on my life. And that had to be a learning process for me because I didn't know anything about alcoholism. But I just thought this man was just trying to piss me off all the time. And I heard this from some other speaker today, and I went, yeah, that was me. That's how I felt about that. The other thing is that this is how our higher power works with us and for us in this program. We all have a higher power. And when I got to this organization, having grown up in the and my dad was a Baptist preacher, I consider myself to know God. I know God. He, that's my buddy. You know, we got it going on and all of this. But what I found was I was overestimating myself, and I was putting my God in a box because I would ask God to take care of these big things, but everything else is like, okay, I got this. I got this. And that's how I treated my son and my friend before Al-Anon. Anything that was going on with the both of them that I didn't like, because I didn't like the drinking that was going on or the drugging that was going on, I would say, well, it's not that bad. It'll be all right tomorrow. I'll do this and I'll do that. And they'll know that I'm not putting up with this crap. And they're just going to stop all of this. And they don't want to be happy. I want to be happy. And if they want to be happy, they better make sure I'm happy. I had all these demands and rules on people that I couldn't control. But that was my effort, was to try to control them. And I say today, I like to wear long nails. I say today, if you saw either of those two people, you would see my claws in their back. Because I certainly tried to control them with my attitude. Either I wouldn't speak or wouldn't be around them or just say mean things or whatever. And my friend told me once, he said, you know, it's an even worse travesty when you don't speak to another person. He said, that is so disrespectful when you don't speak. And I felt like I needed to swallow what I was thinking or feeling, because if I said something, it would really be disrespectful, because that's what was in my mind, something disrespectful. So I just wouldn't even talk at all. And I thought that coming to Al-Anon would help me to know how to help the alcoholic stop drinking. That was so wrong. And I'm glad that I stayed long enough to figure out that it wasn't my deal. It wasn't my deal. And when that happened, it's almost like I knew that in the first meeting, because something was said about talking about the alcoholic. And the response I got is, oh, we're not going to talk about them. We're going to talk about you. And I'm saying, whoa, wait a minute. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm not the one causing all these problems around here. It can't be about me. But, you know, as all of you know, saying, like what someone else said, when you come all the way in the room, you sit all the way down in the chair, and you stay, and you keep coming back, like I finally decided to do, it was just something that comes to me. And I know that this was not a class that I come to learn how to stop my alcoholic from drinking. It's one that creates a journey for my life. And I know today that that's exactly the journey that I need to be on. And I have been encouraged and spurred on in this program this whole time. I've done many service positions, and I've enjoyed every one of them.
Evelyn, it's time.
It's time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. So I just want to say that maybe for someone who hasn't been in the program long, keep coming back and stay. There's something inside of you that tells you you're where you need to be. Follow that spirit. And I also want to say that our your higher power, it may not be the same as anybody else's, but you hold on to that higher power. He'll lead you and guide you through. Thank you, Yvonne. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you, Evelyn. I've got somebody that wants to say hi to you. Chris?
Hi. Evelyn, I have to go all